As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store. When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi-enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at FeathersnapCam.com. That's FeathersnapCam.com. Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Today is going to be episode 17 of In the News. Today is August 28th, and it was my grandmother's birthday. So happy birthday, grandmother, who is no longer with us, but the memories still live on. Okay, so today we are going to start out today. So we've got articles today from this one's going to be the Bozeman Daily Chronicle. And the reason I chose this one is I'm actually a part of this program, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. But we got articles today coming out of Montana. We've got something out of USC, University of Southern Cal, the UK, France, and Pennsylvania today. So we're going to start off from the first one here. From hobbyist to expert, University of Montana's online program cultivates future beekeepers. As the back-to-school season ramps up, one program at the University of Montana is generating quite a buzz. Over a decade ago, when the university first launched its beekeeping certificate, the only program of its kind in the state, students eagerly flocked to the class. However, instructors soon realized they had already reached every interested student in the region. After 2 years, we quickly realized we had educated everyone within a 100-mile radius that was interested, said Dr. Scott Debnam, a beekeeping certificate instructor at the University of Montana. To meet continued demand and accommodate those unwilling to travel to campus, Debnam said moving the program online was the only logical step. Over the past decade, since the certificate became available online, students from 22 countries have gained skills in hive care, disease monitoring, and predator management. This year, the program is also offering a series of courses focused on commercial beekeeping. Debnam said the certificate was developed in response to the growing popularity of beekeeping among hobbyists, many of whom lack the knowledge to prevent disease in their hives. This led to poorly managed bees, which added strain to the commercial industry. To address this, the program offers 3 core classes, apprentice, journeyman, and master beekeeping, that students must complete to become certified master beekeepers. Since the certificate became available online, classes are now offered 50 weeks a year. Debnam said that when the apprentice beekeeping class was first offered online, it filled up in just 40 minutes with a wait list. Although each course lasts only a few weeks, the program is structured to be completed in 3 years, allowing students a full year to apply their skills between classes, according to the university. So anyway, there's a little bit more on that, but what happened here is there's Hives to Heroes. If you're not familiar with this organization, it basically, and I'm not an expert here, I'm just going off of memory, but if you're a veteran, first responder, anybody in that category, they will reimburse your training into Master Beekeeper programs. And the University of Montana program is one of them that's on their approved list. So there's actually another listener of the podcast who's in our Discord room. He kind of pointed it out to me. He signed up, started taking classes, and started going through the process. and kind of pointed me towards the program. So I checked it out and I thought, you know, I've been running my mouth about beekeeping for a long time, and I've gone back and forth with, do I go get the certs? Do I not mess with it? I kind of didn't really care. I don't have like a dream of being a state, you know, apiarist or working for anybody in beekeeping as a job. So I thought, I just don't know that I really need to go down the path. But then I thought, you know, it never hurts to have the credential. And, you know, maybe somebody down the road might need something. And for whatever reason, you know, there would be a requirement that the person who's helping with something be a master beekeeper or whatever. And I thought, well, it'll be fun. You know, let's give it a shot. So I'm actually signed up. They have a test out option where you can test out of the apprentice level. So I did take that test. I'm still waiting on the results of that. I kind of reviewed everything and I only missed two or three on there. So I feel pretty good about that. So anyway, that's where this article comes from, and I wanted to share that with everybody today. Okay, so this next article comes to us out of the BBC, Science Focus. Why bees are secretly one of Earth's most intelligent creatures. They could well be the linchpin holding Earth's entire ecosystem together, so it's no wonder they're busy. Here's everything you need to know about the important insects that are under threat. Bees are winged insects that feed on nectar and pollen and sometimes make honey. There are around 20,000 bee species, of which 270 live in Britain. More than 90% of bee species are solitary, but the remainder, which includes honeybees and bumblebees, live socially in colonies that incorporate a single queen, female workers, and male drones. The biggest bee, Wallace's giant bee, grows up to 4 centimeters long, while the workers of some tiny, stingless bees are smaller than a grain of rice. Bees are found on every continent except Antarctica and in every habitat that contains insect-pollinated flowering plants. They pollinate many of the plants that we depend on for food, and yet they're in decline. The number of bee species has been decreasing for decades, and in Britain, the insects have been lost from a quarter of the places where they used to be found 40 years ago. How intelligent are bees? Bees are highly intelligent creatures. They can count, solve puzzles, and even use simple tools. In one experiment, bees were trained to fly past 3 equally spaced, identical landmarks to reach a sugary reward that was placed 300 meters away. When the number of landmarks was subsequently reduced, the bees flew much further, and when the number of landmarks was increased, the bees landed at a shorter distance. This suggests that the bees were counting the landmarks to help them decide where to land. So the article kind of continues on a little bit more. It talks about, you know, some anatomy, talks about how bees communicate and how they navigate. A couple pictures of like a bumblebee nest, bee evolution. It's kind of a neat article. It's kind of fun. So again, that's coming to us out of the UK today. Okay, next article is coming out of France. Bees starving in disastrous year for French honey. Beekeepers across France say it has been a disastrous year for honey, with bees starving to death and production plummeting by up to 80%. Michael Izambé, I'm taking a guess on that French pronunciation there, a beekeeper in, oh boy, here we go, Saint-Or-les-Rouches in central France, lost 70% of his honey and had to feed his colonies sugar to help them survive after a cold, rainy spring. It's been a catastrophic year, said Izambert, 44, who looks after 450 hives. A beehive typically produces 15 kilos, 33 pounds of honey a year. But this time, Izambert said this farm had only produced between 5 and 7 kilos. When it rains, bees don't fly. They don't go out, so they eat their own honey reserves, said his co-manager and fellow beekeeper, Marie Moir. Low temperatures and heavy rainfall have prevented bees from gathering enough pollen and flowers from producing nectar, which the insects collect to make honey. So anyway, there's a bit more of the article. It's not the longest one. It's fairly short in general, but I just wanted to put that out there for folks in France and for those interested in things going on in the beekeeping world in France. Okay, next, this is going to be USC, University of Southern Cal. Keeping native bees buzzing requires rethinking pest control. New research adds solid evidence to the suspicion that steep declines in America's wild bee populations stem in large part from pesticide use. Saving the crucial pollinators requires new approaches to managing pesky insects, says USC Dornsife researcher. Key points. New research shows a strong correlation between pesticide use and declining sightings of wild bees, with pesticide use causing appearances of some species to drop as much as 56%. The loss of wild bees could disrupt ecosystems affecting plant survival and the wildlife dependent on those plants, while also posing a significant risk to agricultural productivity. And researchers advocate for integrated pest management strategies and more long-term studies to better understand and mitigate the impact of pesticides on wild bees and other pollinators. So the article really is just going through that study, talking about pesticides. We've had other articles and discussions around pesticide use, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I think it's still good to keep it on the forefront and discuss it and keep everybody aware of the prevalence and use of all these pesticides. I mean, it's tough, you know, to be a bee nowadays when you're looking at all the pesticides and varroa and everything that's constantly, you know, trying to beat them up. But thankfully, we have a whole bunch of you out there listening, paying attention, learning, and figuring out how to do things the right way. Okay, last but not least on this episode of Bees in the News, this comes to us from the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine. Breaking into beehive medicine, one beekeeper slash bee veterinarian gives advice on how to conduct a physical examination of a hive and prescribe antimicrobials for bees. Honeybees may be thought of more as wildlife than food production animals, but they share substantive similarities with the latter when it comes to food supply, antimicrobial resistance, One Health, and even euthanasia concerns. Dr. Caitlin Krebs, Assistant Clinical Professor of Primary Care at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine, urges all clinicians to educate themselves about this nascent area of practice. Dr. Krebs is not only a bee veterinarian, but also a beekeeper. Beekeepers know veterinarians don't have a familiarity with bees like they do with dogs or cats, she said. Beekeepers are super nice people and everyone's willing to help because there's a huge need for veterinarians to take care of these bees. A federal rule that went into effect in 2017 brought veterinarians and beekeepers together when it restricted beekeepers from using certain antimicrobials in honeybees without a veterinary feed directive or prescription from a veterinarian. Dr. Krebs gave three presentations at AVMA Convention 2024, held June 21st through 25th in Austin, Texas, that touched on bee biology and bee health and common diseases, including a veterinarian's role in bee health and how to get started, to help her colleagues understand how to break into this area of veterinary medicine. Physical examination. She said that beekeepers should have notes to help practitioners with important information such as the queen's age, if the hive has swarmed, and if the honey's been harvested from the hive. However, this may not always be the case, Dr. Krebs notes, or the records may be kept in an interesting way, and they put that in quotes, such as placing bricks in specific positions that indicate the state of the hive during the last inspection. I'm going to take a quick pause here. This is a very common practice in beekeeping. So you're going through, let's say you got 10 hives. You're doing inspection on number one, everything's fine. You go to number two, and you're like, oh, wow, the queen's not here. I'm not finding the queen, or there's some other kind of issue. You just stand a brick up vertically. So you automatically know, I have a queen issue in any colonies that have the brick standing vertically. And you can do any kind of system that you have. Some people have done colored tags that they keep, you know, in a bag that they carry with them of some sort. So they throw a yellow tag, a white tag, a black tag, whatever it might be, to indicate that they need to perform some sort of intervention later on. That's exactly what they're talking about right here with this brick. Physically examining the hive involves good biosecurity, whether by using the beekeeper's own tools or using your own and disinfecting between apiaries. Dr. Krebs recommended wearing as much protective gear as the veterinarian feels comfortable with. Don't let them tell you that you don't need to wear gear, she said. I have producers who go in with no gloves on. I do surgery and need to make sure I can use my hands, and I don't want puffy hands when I go into the clinic the next day. Inspecting the hive starts with noticing the activity happening on the outside. I get worried when there's no activity at the front, or there's lots of activity one day and the next day is minimal activity, she said. She shared other considerations as follows. The number of dead bees, brood health, adult health, nutritional stores, queen cells. I kind of blasted right past that. The whole article is neat. It goes into antimicrobials and vaccination. It talks about writing, you know, veterinarian feed directives and euthanasia and a few other notes in there. Well, folks, that is going to do it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And, you know, as always, you can feel free to drop me a note, Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's newbees.com. And don't forget, in the Discord room, there is an In the News section there. So if you come across a cool article you'd like to share, by all means, do so. And please check out the YouTube channel here. I am a bit behind. I decided to do a prolonged fast. So I like haven't eaten anything since around 7 o'clock on Sunday. So I'm coming up on like 72 hours of no food. So yeah, it's just one of the things you do when you don't take care of yourself, you don't eat right, you're not exercising, you know, you got to take drastic measures to make things happen. So it's kind of a cool thing, a little bit different. I don't know. We'll see what happens with it. But yeah, I've got a lot of episodes teed up. There's a few things I'm thinking about that I'm not really sure if I'm going to release them or how I'm going to release them. But for the most part, what I'm trying to do is whatever I'm putting out, you know, from a podcast type material, I'm trying to do video where I can and get that onto the YouTube channel as well. I'm going to shift gears a little bit and just move outside because it's just, I can't stand being inside anymore. It drives me absolutely nuts. I keep trying to make these conditions perfect and make everything right. And have a nice pretty background, and it's just, it's a pain in the butt. All right, everybody, I'm going to get out of here. Take care, be kind to one another, and remember, I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.